Welcome to the DWB podcast. I am your host, Joey Reckless. We are going to do a double review here tonight. First, we're going to review the second night of WrestleMania, and then I'm going to move on to Raw. I did not get a chance to record it last night, so I'm sorry. It's going to have to come a little bit late. So first off, night two started off with Randy Orton taking on The Fiend. Fiend was walking backstage in the same area that they utilized during the halftime show of the Super Bowl. To basically explain how he's going to go from a burned fiend back to more of a normal fiend. Basically what they did is use like magical powers basically to heal him. Why he didn't do this earlier, I don't know. But I think they had to do this because his movements in the other suit seemed extremely limited. And this one gave him way more flexibility with... You know, he was able to work a match. Anyways, Alexa Bliss puzzlingly turns on The Fiend for some unbeknownst reason. And it's in a really, like, weird, artsy way. She appears up on this jacket box that The Fiend came out of, bleeding from a crown. Black ink like Randy Orton coughed up, and this distracts The Fiend, who then gets RKO'd and loses the match. This was stupid. This was really dumb. Like, why would she bring back The Fiend only to turn on him? Makes no sense. This is purely just to get their way out of the storyline. Why can't Fiend just go over and move on from the storyline anyways? I don't understand. Like, Randy Orton at this point doesn't need victories. There was no reason to give him a victory in this feud. I don't get it. This was dumb. So I missed this call here. I didn't do so good tonight on these picks. Then Titus and Hogan come out, and it's a very embarrassing thing where they come out as pirates and talk as pirates. It's so cringe. It's very embarrassing. I did not like this. And Bailey's interrupting their segments again tonight, and it was a whole thing. It's sad that they had nothing else for Bailey to do but this. But whatever. Natalya, Tamina taking on the WWE Tag Team Champions Nia and Baszler, and Nia and Baszler won. Why this match? I guess the only thing I can possibly guess is that Tamina and Natalya have been in WWE for so long that maybe WWE wanted to give them one last final WrestleMania moment. And, the tag team champions needed to be on the show, so why not put them in this matchup? It was just a weird choice. Then we had the one of the matches that the crowd was the hottest for. In night two, Sammy taking on Kevin Owens. The crowd really, really was into this. It was a good match. But, like, there was, like, a one point in time where they were chanting that this is awesome. And it was good. It was not awesome. I mean, I know that WrestleMania has always been kind of more internet-friendly. But there was this weird phenomenon where they were quiet for most of the both nights, except for things that they particularly cared about. The story of this matchup was not a good story, so I don't know if that was it. It's almost like they just wanted to react simply because they were former indie darlings. Like, again, it was a really good match, but crowd was like really hot for something that wasn't properly built. And I don't know, it just felt like... other matches throughout the two nights had better builds or maybe better matches, arguably, and didn't get near the attention this match got. I think they would have been better off actually starting the night off with this matchup to get the crowd kind of awake and into it before it started carrying on with the ridiculousness. But for whatever reason, they went with Randy Orton and The Fiend. Owens won this matchup, and then we got to see him stun Logan Paul after the fact. I liked it. You know, it was a good after match thing. It was funny. Like, Sammy got a pop. Owens got a pop. Logan Paul got booed out of the building. And Owens got the biggest pop in the night by stunning him. So clearly the crowd did not care for Logan Paul. Your United States Championship, Sheamus taking on Riddle. This match was really solid as well. Didn't get near the crowd heat that the previous match got, but it was every bit as good in my opinion. And they really went out there and tried a few different things that they don't normally do on TV. So, like, I think that they did bring something different for WrestleMania. And I was right about this one. I was also right about Owens and Nia retaining. So I get three in a row right, because Sheamus won the United States Championship. So, I missed one. Kind of felt kind of like, whoa, that was unexpected. But then I go on a streak of three. It's not bad. Not bad, you know. We'll say so. But then I miss another one. So, the Intercontinental Championship, the drum match of whatever, Big E taking on Apollo Crews. Essentially, all this was various percussion instruments ringside with kendo sticks for some reason. I'm not sure how those are drums. And this was an excuse just to throw people into some things for a few spots, use kendo sticks majority of the time, and go home. Like, I didn't really understand this matchup at all. It wasn't anything different. There was nothing unique about the thing, but whatever. These two had a really good, solid match, too. Was it WrestleMania worthy? No, this was basically a TV match, in my opinion. But we got the re-debut of a guy from the past, I guess Dabo. I don't know. I wasn't watching Raw at the time, so I don't know who he is, but he's very tall. And he attacked Big E after Apollo went through the table. Keep in mind, there is no DQ, so that's fine. He can pick up Big E and chokeslam him. And Apollo crawls over and pins Big E, and they put the IC belt on him. I thought that they should do that because it made more long-term sense. But I thought sometimes WWE can kind of get stuck in their ways and that they would keep the belt around Big E. But they actually did the thing that makes more sense. But technically, I picked Big E to win this match, so I got this wrong. I can't try to ride the fence there and be dishonest. Like I said, the two really solid matches back-to-back, but there's nothing about these matches that were super, WrestleMania worthy. These were just pay-per-view quality matches. Just, that's all they were. I don't understand why one match got more attention than the other one, but that's just how it happened. Then we got the Raw Women's Championship, Asuka taking on Rey. Crowd was into this matchup as well. They were very into Asuka, and there was a kind of like an element of a 50-50 here with the crowd, where some of them were for Ripley still, even though trying to paint her as a heel, and most were with Asuka though. She was definitely the stronger of the two. You could see why maybe they considered turning her if they were going to put her in this matchup, because the crowd tended to favor Asuka. And Asuka was really, really good tonight. I thought she has a different mode, a different motor when it comes to WrestleMania. She just turns it on. She reminds me a lot of like Shawn Michaels in that way, where when the lights go on, she's always good, but then she kind of jumps up a couple levels when she wants to. And this match was really, really good. I really liked it. It was kind of that typical story. Asuka was kind of aggressive. Rey was all about power. There was only like one mistake in the whole match where Rey tried to pick the Asuka up with one arm and couldn't do it. She didn't have the wind. She didn't have the strength at the time of the match to do it. But hey, like, it was weird though, because like when they went home, she went to do her pump handle slam thing. And Asuka didn't really, her timing was a little off, but Rey just yanked her up by pure brute strength and did the move anyways. It was a really amazing feat of strength. But earlier she couldn't pick her up. I don't get that at all. But whatever. Like, that was the only mistake I saw in the whole match. You know, I really liked it. You know, the crowd seemed to like it. We got a new WWE Raw Women's Champion in Rhea Ripley. I called this, so we're back on track as far as my predictions. Roman Reigns, Edge, and Daniel for the SmackDown WWE Championship. This was your main event. Basically, what they laid this match out was is that various points in time in the matchup, one of the three competitors was going to be taken out of the match for at least a little bit, while the other two continue to have a match. And they did this routinely throughout the length of the match. And they told various stories while doing this. You know, at one point in time, Roman Reigns is outside the ring. He's kind of somewhat hurt. Daniel Bryan and Edge are in there. He could potentially lose this match without even being involved in a pinfall. You know, that kind of thing. And eventually we got to a silly place where, you know, Edge can't beat either guy. They keep kicking out. He gets frustrated. It's his destiny to win. And so he does a concerto to Bryan, tries to do one to Reigns. Reigns gets up, does one to him, and then spears him, and then that's it. Roman Reigns wins. Now, he did drag Edge's body over onto Bryan and then covered both of them, but wouldn't that technically mean that Edge pinned Daniel Bryan? How would that work exactly? I wouldn't be surprised if they do some kind of, the finish of this matchup is in dispute in some way, shape, or form. I would guess they're going to go Edge and Roman Reigns at Backlash in a singles match. That's what I, you know, just thinking out loud here, I think that's where they're going, just by the end of this matchup. We'll see what the SmackDown does. They have 5 weeks, so there's no big rush, but I think that would make sense. This match was, you know, really good. The crowd was very into Edge. You know, I'm not sure exactly what it was about the nostalgia act and why they were so hot for him, but yeah, they were definitely happy to see him, and he actually got more crowd reaction than Daniel Bryan got, in my opinion. And Roman Reigns, we got the answer to our question of, like, what will the crowd do with the current Roman Reigns? They'll boo him, like they always have. So that answered that question. This was a really, really good match. I wouldn't say it's the best match of the weekend. I would actually say that was, well, geez, if you consider everything all told, like NXT TakeOver, I would say Walter and Ciampa was probably the best match of the night, of the weekend. But if you don't want to count NXT, then it was Sasha and Belair by a lot. But this was really, really good. Those two matches were probably the strongest matches on night one and two. You add in Rollins and Cesaro and Owens and Sammy, that's four. There was a couple other matches that were okay. This still doesn't wash out to me to be an all-time great WrestleMania. This actually is one of the weaker WrestleManias, match quality-wise, story-wise. You know, I think it's going to be one of those WrestleManias that's really critically panned, but maybe in 5 to 10 years, people start to soften on it. I mean, it was a thumbs up, but it was barely a thumbs up. This builds, it's going to be frustrating for me, because I think everybody that was watching this build towards this WrestleMania will recognize just how poorly they built this card up. But then over time, people are just going to forget that stuff. They're not going to remember the build, and they're just going to go back and they're going to watch the matches, and they're just going to be like, oh, that was a really good match. And it's going to, over time, I think, pick up more popularity. But there was nothing on this card that was an all-time great WrestleMania moment. Sorry, there just wasn't. So that was my thoughts on WrestleMania. All in all, not bad, but not even close to, I wouldn't even put it in the top 30. I actually think I would put it in the bottom 7 somewhere. But that's just me. I'd love to know what you think. Please like, subscribe to the show, and let me know. You can actually leave messages and stuff like that for the show. All right. So that was your WrestleMania recap. Tonight was the first Raw after WrestleMania, which is usually a big Raw. Keep in mind that we are available on Spotify, iTunes, and other podcast catchers. Those are two big two. Just type in DWB podcast and you will find the show. If you're sharing it to somebody or something like that, the links will be there for you to use. Please subscribe, like, share the podcast. It's a cheap way to support the show. So tonight, Raw, we got Ashley entering the building. Riddle walks up to him and starts kind of calling him out on some stuff. And eventually, you know, Lashley gets annoyed and hits him down and says, fine, you can have your match. Basically, this was just an excuse to have another match, I guess. Why Lashley had to work tonight, I don't know, but whatever. Lashley defends his title against Riddle. Lashley wins. He attacked Riddle before the bell even rang, did most of his damage before the bell rang. Riddle didn't quite quit, but eventually Lashley was just too much and won this matchup. What is interesting is they've changed up the roster for Monday Night Raw. Adman Virk from ESPN is now your play-by-play guy. I like it. I'm wondering how much of the product he's been watching, because it seemed like he at least knew some of what was going on and didn't seem lost. It didn't seem like he needed to kind of like be filled in on what exactly was going on. I like him as the play-by-play guy a lot better than Todd. And, so they changed up the announce table a little bit. The Samoa Joe's gone. Todd Phillips is gone. Byron Saxton's still there. I don't know why, but he's still there. All in all, it wasn't, it was kind of a quick change. You know, just last night, they had the Raw guys on, like, the first night of the week of the WrestleMania, and then they switched over to Cole and Corey Graves for the second night. And then here on Raw, they just move away from two guys that were just on Monday Night Raw as announcers. Kind of crazy, but, I mean, that's how WWE does it sometimes. Sometimes just life changes fast, man. Rey does an interview, basically just kind of establishing her heel character a little bit more. Not really saying a whole lot except that it's the age of brutality or something like that. It was okay promo. You know, it's one of those things that I worry about her sometimes, because just knowing Vince, that Australian accent, man, it's got to drive him crazy. I'm interested to see if they make her character any more important than, any more fleshed out than they currently are making her. I highly doubt it, because WWE kind of just does the bare bones. But they are trying to paint her with her, like, some of the things she said, more heel than just necessarily your actions, which is nice, because usually WWE would just do the actions and expect that to carry over. So, it's going to be interesting to see how long her reign is, see who she goes up against. I'm liking, I'll be anxiously waiting to see what they do with her as the women's champion. Cedric and Shelton taking on the Viking Raiders, who returned tonight. This is one of the big returns. I'm not sure that this would move the needle much, but to be honest, SmackDown and Raw both need a lot of help on the tag team division. I think it was smart to bring these guys back. They need tag teams. They're a ready-made tag team. I like it. It's going to be interesting now that they've performed live in front of a crowd and stuff like that, to see if they're going to start expanding the roster of Raw and SmackDown a little bit more. They're still not touring, though, so it's kind of one of those things of, I'm not sure exactly how big the roster might get, but they certainly need a few tag teams to kind of freshen up the roster here. And so it was nice to see them, but I'm just not sure that's exactly what people were thinking when they always think about, you know, big returns or big debuts or anything like that. There really wasn't any of that tonight. This was as close as we got. Then Charlotte Flair comes out to cut a promo. It was a really good promo. I've always heard that people don't really know how to feel about her promos. Some people like her promos, some people don't. I like this one, though. It was definitely a heel promo, definitely coming back and establishing that she just doesn't care and she's going to be a heel because she knows she's the best. I think this is her strongest character. I think she's not as good of a babyface. She's not as interesting. I mean, her work is so good that sometimes, you know, you can kind of accept her as a babyface just on work alone. But I think character-wise, she's a much easier heel, and I think that's her strong suit. So I'm happy to see her re-debuting, you know, here on Monday Night Raw as a heel. And so she basically says, I'm the baddest bitch in town, and I'm going to prove it. So that was interesting. Rey taking on Asuka. It results in nothing because Charlotte Flair attacks them both. So clearly they're just going to go ahead and insert Charlotte Flair right into the title picture, which is interesting. Man, I hope they don't put the belt on her. And I hope Rey wasn't just a transitional champion. I think a lot of people would get turned off by that. Like, for me personally, just being real with you, like, when CM Punk won the world title and then did the whole, you know, I quit thing, I was so just excited and so, like, CM Punk mark. And when they went out of their way to destroy that, I quit watching wrestling for several years. I just didn't want to support, like, WWE at that point because every guy that I would like, they would just trash. So, like, what's the point of expending my time and energy in the liking guys, seeing them finally get to the mountaintop only for the rug to be pulled out just because of politics? You know, that's just where I was at that time. I hope they don't do that here because a lot of people would share that story just in a different way with Rey. A lot of people were expecting her to have a really good, fair, honest, good shot on the main roster. Miz was walking in. We find out he's going to do a Miz TV thing. God help us. And then we had this weird thing, like, where I was kind of like, why are they playing a replay of Mandy falling? And then I was like, oh, this is clearly somebody probably making fun of her. Sure enough, we slowly panned back to see Baszler and Nia Jax making fun of Mandy for falling down at WrestleMania. Eventually, Mandy says, yeah, it was embarrassing. You know, it's funny how things happen. You're not expecting it. And she smacks Nia. And then, like, her and Dana, like, weirdly, like, bump into her and run her into a wall. And somehow that knocks her down. I'm not sure exactly. It was the weakest attack I've ever seen in my entire life. The line was good, but then the follow-through sucked. This is purely just to set up the match later tonight, but, like, man, Dana and Mandy just don't work for me. Everything they do, every time they try with them, somehow, some way, they manage to screw it up, and I just can't care about the characters. Sorry. Bliss promo. This was the confirmation that she did on purposely cost the Fiend the match. Basically, somehow she realized she never needed the darkness, aka the Fiend, because she's all powerful herself. And again, why bring back the Fiend? Like, so you're trying to bring back the Fiend because you missed the Fiend, you missed your playmate. Somewhere in there, you realize that you never really needed the Fiend, but you were already bringing him back. Why not put him back in the box then? This makes no sense, dude. It makes no sense. It's dumb. Hate it. Then we get the Miz TV thing where he comes out with Maurice. It's the first time Maurice has been on TV in quite a long time with Morrison, and it was weird. It was subtle. Well, I don't know how subtle it was, but they didn't quite focus on it on commentary. But Miz seemed to be healing on Morrison, kind of being annoyed by Morrison. a little bit more than they have in the past. And I don't know, it kind of felt like maybe a foreshadowing of maybe a heel turn from The Miz on Morrison, maybe blaming him for the loss at WrestleMania. Maybe not. I don't know, because they moved off of it, you know, and usually WWE might usually try to send out a stronger feeler or something like that if they were going to go that direction. But we'll see. Eventually, it was Morrison and Miz taking on Damian Priest in a handicap match. And surprise, 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 Miz and Morrison actually won. I mean, it was by distraction, but still, I was like shocked. So Damian Priest loses his first match in WWE, and I was really, really surprised. We're not gonna get a year-long, you know, undefeated streak. We're not gonna get, and you know, kind of have to ask yourself, like, does, I mean, even with the win under the circumstances it was, what does that say about WWE and Damian Priest? Does that mean that they've lost some confidence in him? Because I mean, Miz was pretty much a jobber before he won the WWE title. And even then, like, quickly got beat by Bobby Lashley. So what does it say about, like, Priest that he lost so quickly to, like, Miz? I mean, yeah, by distraction, but I don't know, man. I don't want to overreact too much to a loss, but that's not good. How it happened was Maryse jumped up on the apron, and Priest just didn't want to, you know, hit her, so he kindly asked her to get down, please. He repeated himself. She got down, and Miz rolled him up. I liked it. I think it was Corey Graves said, chivalry just cost him the match or something like that. I thought that was like a really good line that, like, to try to be polite cost him one here. Then we had a Nia and Baszler interview. Then we go right to the Nia and Baszler taking on Dana and Mandy match. Good, man. Don't like these two on TV. Nia and Baszler can try everything they can. I just don't like these two. I find them boring. There's got to be a better tag team. Let's create some tag teams. Come on, there's got to be something better. I don't like these two. But, you know, Nia Jax and Baszler eventually won, so it really didn't matter. And then there was this odd, like, thing of MVP in the ring talking, then Drew came out, then Braun came out, then Orton came out, and then Adam Pearce came out, and then there was just kind of like, we'll have a match later. And then Drew and Braun confront each other in the back, and that's when you realize Braun has a black eye, which was not ideal, but had a black eye, and him and Drew were arguing. You know, it was a little bit late in the show to announce the main event. You know, usually you want to do it a little bit earlier, but hey, I'm like, okay. It definitely shows some star power in the main, I'll tell you that. So then we had Elias in the ring. He was going to play his song, but every time he strummed the guitar, you hear the horn from Xavier, and this eventually leads to New Day coming out way too happy after losing their tag team titles. And way inconsistent. Logically, this made no sense whatsoever. They are criticizing Elias and Jackson for getting beat up by one guy and embarrassing the tag team division when they themselves got beat up by one guy, essentially, and almost. I didn't understand this at all, and it made it even worse that Elias pointed this out, and they basically had no comeback but to be annoying. Listen, I don't know what New Day did to get themselves over and be considered one of the greatest tag teams in the history of the world. But as of right now, as they are now, they're just plain annoying. They're not funny. They're just annoying. They're trying way too hard. They need to relax a little bit, not push as hard. Let the stuff flow a little bit easier. But New Day won this matchup. I guess this was trying to repair them after losing the tag team titles. But for me, man, I think the frustrating part about this is seeing them come out dancing and happy. You just lost the tag team titles. Like, that makes the titles look worthless. You're not even worried about losing now. I don't like that. Then we had our first Firefly Funhouse in quite a long time. And all the characters are back. It was an interesting one. I think, you know, Ray's going to need some time to kind of find a character again. It was a weird tone, which I think it was supposed to be, because it's supposed to show that he's angry about Bliss kind of turning on him and not being a true friend, because Abigail is calling her the B word and stuff like that. And, you know, it was, and there was some subtle things that Bray was doing that, you know, most people might miss, but subtle little things he was doing with his face and his body posture that indicated that he was not happy, and that this was actually himself kind of being annoyed and voicing his annoyedness. So apparently we're going to go with this whole Fiend Alexa Bliss thing. Not really thrilled about that. I would have liked to see this continue, like, especially now that he's back, why not have her kind of be like involved with this for a while and then move on from it. It seems like basically Alexa Bliss was really only here in this role because Bray needed to take some time away from TV. And now that he's back, there's no, I guess they feel like he doesn't need her. But before they can move her away from this, they got to do a storyline to kind of explain why she's probably going to go back to the Alexa Bliss we all know. That's assuming where they're going. Main event time, Drew, Orton, Braun. This match was okay. I mean, it wasn't anything to write home about. Certainly wasn't as good as some of the past Raw main events have been. Drew won. And then we got a really terrible go-home segment. MVP comes out. Mace and T-Bar attack Drew. I guess Mace and T-Bar might be associated with the Hurt Business now. Man, I hope they drop the Mace and the T-Bar. I hope they drop the silly gimmicks because it looks ridiculous. It doesn't necessarily have to go that route. But, like, it was a weird way to go off the air. Because all they did was pick him up and double chokeslam him. I mean, if you're going to do something like this, why not do, like, an AEW-style beatdown and try to actually get them heel heat instead of just doing it for the sake of doing it. I know WWE doesn't really want to be able to be that violent, but there's a couple off-road ramps between this and what AEW does when they want to do something similar. This landed flat to me, and I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't be surprised if they totally forget about this storyline. Because had Mace and T-Bar come out with some other gimmick, I think people would be more excited about this. But since they're carrying the retributionness over, I think this is no buys. So it was a thumbs down, go home. I mean, thumbs down, Raw after Mania for me. There was no big debut. There was a couple surprises, but they weren't anything to move the needle for. Man, this was not... And I don't think this is going to live up to a lot of people's expectations. And this just proves that WWE's in a state now that they just can't do good shows anymore. Not to the level that they used to. I mean, this was the one Raw where just about everybody who watches or has a passing interest in wrestling would always watch. And there would always be, you feel like you would get your money's worth. And tonight, if people did, I don't see how too many people felt like they got their money's worth. Anyways, I didn't really like Raw. Looks like we're going to get a continuation of some way, shape, or form of Drew and Lashley. With Drew chasing. Looks like Alexa Bliss and The Fiend is definite. We're still trying to find a place for Randy Orton and Braun. There's something going on with the Hurt Business. We don't know exactly where the Women's Tag Team Champions will go next. Charlotte is certainly heel and inserted into the women's title picture right away. And there may be a possible turn coming from The Miz on Morrison. So that, those are your stories coming out of this. Thank you so much for listening to DWB. I'm your host, Joey Reckless. Please like, subscribe to the show, share the show. It is a free way to support the show. Till next time. This is Joey Reckless telling you to pop in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze, and then follow that up with a healthy dose of some Stone Temple Pilots. All right. See you later.